24 to 29. It's page 972 in the Church Bibles. So I've met, as many of you, I hope most of you know by now, that as part of my sabbatical in July, I, with my family, are off to Sri Lanka. And as we prepare to go off to Sri Lanka, here's a photo of the centre of Sri Lanka and the recent floods that happened just a few weeks ago. Now, as you look at that photo and the mudslides that happened because of the flooding and the rain, whether that house was built by a foolish man or a wise man, I don't know. You'll have to decide. But I show that because here in this country, we complain about flooding a bit, don't we? Let's face it. Remember, not last winter, the winter before, there was a lot of rain, there was a lot of flooding, and terrible things happen. People have to move out of their houses. But let's face it, we don't really know what flooding is about. In this country, we're very fortunate. We live in a temperate climate, and therefore we are shielded from some of the extremes of weather that people face in the rest of the world. But Jesus was talking about that kind of flood. He was talking about sudden floods, the kind of flood that can just suddenly erupt in the desert and wipe everything away. Sudden, dramatic, life-threatening. He was talking about that kind of flood. And so as Jesus utters his final warning in the Sermon on the Mount, we've come full circle. For those of you who can remember, we started the year, the first Sunday in January, with our verse for the year, which was, in this passage, Matthew 7:24. Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. And so we began the year by thinking about building our lives on the rock, being prepared for the storms of life that reveal what our lives are really built on. But I want us to see that Jesus is not just thinking about the storms of life here. In fact, specifically, he has one flood in mind. And we know that because of the context. Ever since verse 13 of chapter 7, Jesus has been giving out storm warnings. Last week, we discovered that he had one particular climatic event in mind. He calls it that day. That day. In other words, that's the background to this parable of the wise man and the foolish man, that it's ultimately about the final judgment, the last day, when God will judge all human beings, and his judgment will reveal whether their lives were built on the rock or on sand. Literally, at the end of the day, Jesus will expose the foundations of our lives. So with that in mind, let's look at this passage again, Matthew 7, verses 24 to 29, in order to heed Jesus' final warning. It's a very simple story. Let's take the very simple points it makes by first of all looking at the wise man described in verses 24 and 25. Again, therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, yet it did not fall because it had its foundation on the rock. Those of us who grew up in church singing that song, the wise man built his house upon the rock, this story is so familiar to us, in fact probably too familiar to us, that we miss the very simple points that Jesus is making. The first thing is, the only thing we're really told about this wise man, the only thing to concentrate, is that he built his house on the rock. That's the only difference between him and the foolish man. And that speaks about the foundation of his life. When I lived in Edinburgh, I worked for a church in the centre of Edinburgh, and when you move about the centre of Edinburgh, you are struck by the castle. Edinburgh Castle is a dominating image within the city. Almost everywhere you can go, even between the tall buildings, you can see the castle. And that's no coincidence, because the original settlers who built that chose the volcanic rock that sticks out in the middle of the city because it provided a secure, sure foundation. It was the location of the building that matters. It was the foundation of the castle that matters. That's the thing we're supposed to see. Because verse 25 then carries on with an air of inevitability. It does not start with when. Literally it says, and the rain came, and the streams rose, and the wind blew. So this is no freak storm. This is a storm that happens occasionally, yes, but it's bound to happen sooner or later. This is not building your house if the storm may come. This is building your house on the rock when the storm comes, if that makes sense. And the thing about this house, the wise man, is it doesn't fall when the floods come. And why? Because it has its foundation on the rock. Now see that. That is the only difference. Jesus does not say that this wise man built his house particularly well. Jesus does not say that this wise man used really good materials for his house. The only difference between him and the other guy is that it's built on the rock. So as Emily asked us earlier, a very good question to ask at this point, is what does that stand for? The story is pretty simple, but what does that mean? What does it mean to build your house on the rock? Jesus puts it very clearly. Everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice. So it's all about hearing and doing. And I think that is so simple that especially those of us who've grown up in church for a long time, we miss it. Because we tend to overcook it, don't we? We want to say that the wise man, the wise person, man or woman, is the person who believes in Jesus. That's what we want to say. And now that's true, but notice that's not what Jesus says here. It is true, of course, that we are saved by faith alone. Our good deeds is not the thing that saves us. But Jesus is not talking, the rock does not stand for faith in Jesus. Our belief is not mentioned in this story at all. No, the wise person is the person who hears what Jesus says and puts it into practice. As we saw last week, that's got to do with integrity, doesn't it? Jesus does not demand perfection. At this point, he knows we will fail his commands. But the point is, it's not enough to say we believe in him if we don't try to put into practice what he says. If we're not obeying what he says, that shows we don't really believe in him in the first place. Doesn't it? And similarly, maybe those of us who are not used to going to church, maybe we want to say Jesus, we wish rather, Jesus said something else. We wish that Jesus said something like, well, the wise man is the person who lives according to the golden rule. It is sort of nice to other people generally. And again, that's true. Jesus does talk about loving our enemies, treating people that way. But that's not specifically what he says here, is it? No, to have your house standing when the storm comes, you need to hear the words of Jesus and put them into practice. All of them. Not some of them, not picking and choosing, not saying, well, I like what Jesus said about that and I don't like that. All of them. That's the wise person. Hears all the words of Jesus, puts it all into practice. Challenging. Because let's contrast him with the foolish man in verses 26 and 27. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash. And again, because it's such a familiar story, I think we miss the very simple point Jesus is making. That the only difference between these two people is that the second one built his house on sand. No foundations, just sand. So Jesus is asking us that direct question. On what foundations is your life built? The location of your house, your life? It's the foundations. That's all that matters. What's your postal address? Is it Sandy Lane? Because one day the storm will strike. And on that day, Jesus says, everyone will be treated equally. See, when it comes to house prices, even the recent floods we had a couple of years ago, house prices don't go down. People still are willing to take a risk on a house in a floodplain because, well, maybe it's a 50-year flood or a once in every 100-year flood. But Jesus tells us there is nothing left to chance. The flood will come. No one can hope that they might miss out. And when the storm strikes, the house in Sandy Lane fell with a great crash, like the house in the photo. Maybe not completely flattened, but totally wiped out. And so the contrast is obvious, isn't it, but very poignant. The foolish person is someone who hears the words of Jesus, just like the wise person, but their difference is they don't put them into practice. So we have, for example, let's say two people. For sake of argument, let's say they're identical twins. They wear the same clothes, they go to the same places, they look exactly the same. They both probably go to the same church. They both hear the words of Jesus. They both claim to be followers of Jesus. Both of them know the teaching of Jesus so well they can possibly quote some of it. But one of them puts it into practice and the other doesn't. One is wise, the other is foolish. And this passage is so challenging precisely because I think we find it easy to ignore the implication of what Jesus is saying. Years ago, I was asked to speak at a wedding blessing. There was a couple, they were going to get married at a registry office. They knew myself and Emily, and so they wanted a religious sort of ceremony, and they wanted me to take part in that. So we met up several months beforehand to sort of plan the day, and we got to the point where I said, well, would you like a particular Bible reading as part of this service? And the bride-to-be said this passage. She wanted the wise man and the foolish man read at her wedding. And as she said that, because she explained her choice to me like that, she said that both her and her husband-to-be had been through some tough times in life. This has been hard. But she said, this marriage is going to be rock solid. That's what she said. That's her aspirations. And that's why she wanted this reading. And you sort of understand that. But as you were speaking, I was thinking that in so many ways that represents so many people in Britain today, doesn't it? She is realistic enough, honest enough to realise that many marriages fail. She's perceptive enough to realise that relationships that don't have deep foundations will collapse under pressure. But the only foundation she could offer, the only sort of hope she had, was just her willpower. She was just basically saying, this marriage is going to last because I'm going to make it. I'm going to make him make it as well, if you knew them. So it's just my willpower. And I'm not picking on her because I'm saying that actually we're all like that. It doesn't matter whether you're talking about marriage or all sorts of other things in life. We're all the same. We say, my life is going to be okay because I'm building it. My kind of sheer willpower is going to make this happen. This is what building on sand is like. And at that point, it got a bit embarrassing because, you know, I was trying to sort of be very nice and move the planning of the wedding on, etc. But I said to sort of, you sure you really want this passage? Would you call yourself a Christian? And she said, oh, no, I'm interested in lots of different religions. In fact, actually, Buddhism is probably the one most sort of appeals to me. And I was, again, gently trying to say, So in this, you want me to read out a story where the wise man is the person who hears the words of Jesus, and we're going to read that out, and that's the person who obeys what Jesus says, and the foolish person is the one who listens to the words of Jesus and doesn't put it into practice. Now, fortunately, I was rescued by her husband-to-be because he managed to realize where this was going and chose another passage, probably 1 Corinthians 13, I'm not sure. As I say, I'm not having a go at her. So typical of society that actually we're so unaware that we act like the foolish man in so many ways, and we're not aware of that. We can't see that we're doing that. We're basically waving a flag saying, look at me, in this story, I'm the foolish man because I hear the words of Jesus all the time, but I don't put them into practice. Now instead, Jesus says the foundations we're to build in our lives on are outside of ourselves. It's not our willpower. We've got to trust in something else for our lives. The very words of Jesus himself. Now, in this day and age, that probably strikes you as quite odd, doesn't it? It's a strange thing to say, that we trust in Jesus alone. But that's what Jesus says, and it's either incredibly arrogant or amazingly true. And that's why we finish with the person of Jesus in verses 28 and 29, because Matthew writes in such a way, he wants us to see, after the wise man and the foolish man, most importantly, we finish with Jesus Christ, whom I've called the God-man. See, the Sermon on the Mount concludes with a fascinating comment by Matthew, doesn't it? When Jesus had finished saying these things, the crowds were amazed at his teaching, because he taught as one who had authority and not as their teachers of the law. See, that is what the story of the wise man and the foolish man is all about. It's all about Jesus. That's the question today. Jesus, what do you make of him? Jesus stands like a fork in the road of history, dividing into literally BC, before Christ, AD, the year of our Lord. And so similarly, he divides humanity the same way in how we react to him. We can read here that at the time the crowds reacted to him favorably. They saw him as an amazing teacher. And maybe this morning that's you. You think, yeah, there is something about this guy that really interests me. He is pretty amazing. He stood out in his day. But Matthew notes that he stood out as different. There was something extra. He wasn't just an amazing teacher. See, the teachers of Jesus' day were common, and there were lots of rabbis like Jesus at that time. He wasn't unique in that. But they always based what they said on the authority of others. So you would quote, you would say, someone would come, they would gather people, disciples around them, and they'd teach them, and they'd say, well, we need to go this way because Rabbi Hillel or some rabbi in the past said this. So because of his authority, you know, what I'm saying must be true. But not Jesus. Jesus was totally different from all of this, because Jesus had his own authority. Jesus spoke the very words of God. Jesus didn't need to appeal to any other authority. He was it. He was saying, listen to me, I am speaking the very words of God. So who do you think Jesus was and is? You know, an amazing guy, yes, but just a guy. Or really the Son of God, speaking the words of God. He forces us to choose, and that's the point of the wise man and the foolish man. Basically, they both might think Jesus is great, but only one of them thinks he really is God and responds accordingly. Are we prepared to recognize Jesus as the Lord who must be obeyed? After all, that was the specific claim made in last week's passage, do you remember? We must not call him Lord, Lord, if we don't do what he says. That was last week. So when Jesus says, follow me, he doesn't just mean on Twitter. He means, follow me, literally. Do what I say. And not only that, but last week, Jesus had the audacity to describe himself as the judge who will decide. That actually when this storm comes, it is Jesus who is the one who decides which of the houses built on sand and which on the rock. So it all comes down to this. Jesus, what do you make of him? Is he just an amazing teacher, or is he really the Lord of history, the Son of God? Because that is what the Sermon on the Mount is all about. Oh, can you, there we click on to the last one, brilliant. Jesus here is explaining what it means to be a Christian, a follower of Jesus. A disciple of Jesus is someone who hears the words of Jesus and puts it into practice. And I finish like that because that may surprise some of you. Most of us, I'm sure, if we've been around churches for any time, have heard a different definition of Christian. Most people define a Christian as someone who believes in Jesus. But notice I didn't say that. I defined a Christian here in this passage as someone who obeys the teachings of Jesus. And we might react against that and think, no, but it's not about behavior. It's not about keeping rules. It's about belief. A Christian is someone who believes in Jesus. Well, I think the confusion arises because in 21st century Britain, we use the word believe in a slightly different way to the way it's used in the New Testament. When we use the word believe, we usually mean something along the lines of intellectual assent. So, for example, I might say, I believe that the Fire of London happened in 1666. And what I'm basically saying, when I say I believe that, what I'm saying is probably, I've read the historical evidence, and probably on balance, the events that we call the Fire of London probably did happen in that year, 1666. But then we do the same to Jesus. So when I say, I believe that Jesus died for me, what I might just be saying is, well, yeah, probably there was a guy called Jesus, and probably he was crucified, executed by the Romans in, I don't know, AD 33. But that is all. And yet the Sermon on the Mount challenges, if that's what we think belief in Jesus means, the Sermon on the Mount challenges that. And passages like this cause me to change the way I talk about that. So now when I talk to people who are thinking about becoming Christians, less and less do I say you need to believe in Jesus. More and more I say you need to trust in Jesus. Because I think in our culture that conveys more of what the New Testament means by faith or belief. We need to trust in Jesus. And that's what I want to say to you. That's the summary of the Sermon on the Mount. Do you trust in Jesus? And I like that word trust because trust involves a relational commitment, doesn't it? Yes, I might have an intellectual assent, I might believe some things about Jesus, but more than that, I trust him enough to obey him, to let him run my life. So a Christian is someone who trusts in Jesus. Now yes, of course, first of all, that means they trust that his death and his resurrection is enough, is sufficient to put me right with God in the first place. But more than that, I trust him to follow him, to do what he says. And I can't say I trust him if I don't obey him. If I'm not doing what he says, I'm not really trusting him. Do I trust him that when he gives me a command, it's for my good? Do I trust him that he wouldn't ask me to sacrifice something or surrender something or do something or not do something? Do I trust him that he wouldn't ask those things unless he thought this was really for my good? Do I trust him? And the other reason why I like that word trust is because, again, it's a relational word. It's not about rule keeping. Because even as I define, if I define a Christian as someone who obeys the words of Jesus, some of you might be thinking, well, does that mean that I have to get sort of 100% on this? Is it like an exam? That if, oh dear, on the 18th of March 2006, I failed one of them, that's it, I'm not a Christian? Well, no, because trust involves a relationship, doesn't it? The great thing about a relationship with Jesus is there is provision for forgiveness when we fail. There is the hope through the work of the Spirit for behavioural change. So do you see the scene? Jesus is not saying that the wise man is necessarily perfect in all his or her obedience, but the wise man trusts Jesus and wants to obey him in every area of my life. So the wise man is not perfect in his obedience, but he is total in his trust. So again today, Jesus says, do you trust me? That every one of my commandments is good for you, all of my teaching. Or when you go through the Sermon on the Mount, do you pick and choose the bits you like and the bits you don't like? Because what Jesus wants us to understand is when we do that, the moment we choose, what we're saying is I'm building the life on my foundation. Because really, it is my willpower. I'm the one who can choose my morality, my way to live. Jesus says, no, your only hope is to trust me and go my way. And that is challenging. Just if you were here last week, David did that. And I want to just really briefly do that again. We need to remember, when Jesus says these words, hear these words, what's he talking about? Well, at the very least, he's talking about the Sermon on the Mount. And that's not just about nice and cuddly things, it's challenging things too. Remember Matthew 5, 6 and 7. We're going to review it next week. These words of Jesus have included, amongst other things, commands about hate and anger, about lust and adultery, marriage and divorce, about making promises and telling the truth, loving our enemies, helping the poor, about prayer and fasting, treasures in heaven, and on and on and on. That's what Jesus means by these words of mine. And that is the final warning of the Sermon on the Mount. Therefore, he says, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. What are you building your house on? Let's pray. Before I pray, we're just going to have a few moments of silence, just time for you to prayerfully reflect on that passage and to ask the Lord, what are you saying to me personally through your word?